fat Irish girl in a black morning dress. Now, black didn't look any better than a white satin. Englander must have known who she was. Her pitch had been in the Chicago papers next to Scully's, because he showed her to the table himself and shushed a couple of drunks at the bar been snickering at her. I felt badly for her, like I feel for Billy Boy sometimes. It's tough to be on the outside. You don't have to be out there to know, although I'd have to agree you can't know just what it's like. And she had been very sweet, the little I'd talked to her. When the break came, I went over to a table. "I'm sorry about your brother," I said awkwardly. "I know he really cared for you, and, I might just about fired those guns myself," she said. She was looking down at her hands, and now that I noticed them, I saw they were really her best feature, small and comely. Everything that little man said was true. "Oh, say now," I replied, "a non sequitur if there ever was one. But what else was there to say?" I was sorry I'd come over. She talked so strangely, as if she was all alone and crazy. "I'm not going to divorce him, though," she went on. "I'd kill myself first and damn my soul to hell." "Don't talk that way," I said. "Haven't you ever wanted to kill yourself?" she asked, looking at me passionately. "Doesn't it make you feel like that when people use you badly and then laugh at you? Or did no one ever do it to you?" "Oh, you may say so, but you pardon me if I don't believe it. Do you know what it feels like to eat and eat and to hate yourself for it, and then eat more? Do you know what it feels like to kill your own brother because you're fat?" People were turning to look, and the drunks were sniggering again. "I'm sorry," she whispered. I wanted to tell her I was sorry, too. I wanted to tell her, oh, anything at all, I reckon, that would make her feel better, holler down to where she was, inside all that flab. But I couldn't think of a single thing. So I just said, "I have to go. We have to play another set." "Of course," she said softly. "Of course you must. Or they'll start to laugh at you. But why I came was, will you play Roses of Picardy? Oh, I thought you played it very nicely at the reception. Will you do that?" "Sure," I said. "Be glad to." And we did. But she left halfway through the number, and since it was sort of schmaltzy for a place like Englander's, we dropped it and swung into a ragtime version of the Varsity Drag. That one always tore him up. Now, I drank too much the rest of the evening, and by closing, I'd forgotten all about her. Well, almost. Leaving for the night, it came to me, what I should have told her. "Life goes on," and that's what I should have said. That's what you say to people when a loved one dies. But thinking it over, I was glad I didn't. Because maybe that's what she was afraid of. Of course, now everyone knows about Maureen Romano and her husband Rico, who survives her as the taxpayer's guest in the Illinois State Penitentiary. As she took over Scully's two-bit organization and turned it into a prohibition empire that rivaled Capone's. As she wiped out two other Northside gang leaders and swallowed their operations. As she had the Greek brought before her and supposedly killed him by sticking a piece of piano wire through his left eye and into his brain as he knelt in front of her, blubbering and pleading for his life. Rico, the bewildered valet, became her first lieutenant and was responsible for a dozen gangland hits himself. I followed Maureen's exploits from the West Coast, where we were making some pretty successful records. Without Billy Boy, though. He formed a band of his own not long after we left Englander's, an all-black combination that played Dixieland and ragtime. They did real well down south, and I was glad for them. It was just as well. Lots of places wouldn't even audition us with a Negro in the group. But I was telling you about Maureen. She made great news copy, and not just because she was a kind of Ma Barker with brains, although that was part of it. Oh, she was awful big, and she was awful bad. And Americans from coast to coast felt a strange sort of affection for her. When she died of a heart attack in 1933, some of the papers said she weighed 500 pounds. I doubt it, though. I mean, no one gets that big. do they? Anyway, her funeral made front pages. More than you could say for a brother who never got past page 4 in his whole miserable career. It took 10 pallbearers to carry a coffin. There was a picture of him, toting it in one of the tabloids. It was a horrible picture to look at. A coffin was the size of a meat locker. Which, in a way, I suppose it was. Rico wasn't bright enough to hold things together by himself, and he fell for assault with intent to kill the very next year. I never been able to get her out of my mind. Or the agonized, hangdog way Scully had looked that first night when he talked about her. But I cannot feel too sorry for her, looking back. Fat people can always stop eating. Guys like Billy Boy Williams can only stop breathing. I still don't see any way I could have helped either of them, but I do feel sort of bad. Every now and then. Probably just because I've gotten a lot older and don't sleep as well as I did when I was a kid. That's all it is, isn't it? Isn't it?
Paranoid, a chant. Read by Will Patton.
I can't go out no more. There's a man by the door in a raincoat smoking a cigarette. But I put him in my diary, and the mailers are all lined up on the bed, bloody in the glow of the bar sign next door. He knows that if I die, or even drop out of sight, the diary goes, and everyone knows the CIA's in Virginia. 500 mailers bought from 500 drug counters, each one different, and 500 notebooks with 500 pages in every one. I am prepared. I can see him from up here. His cigarette winks from just above his trench coat collar. And somewhere, there's a man on a subway, sitting under a black velvet ad, thinking my name. Men have discussed me in back rooms. If the phone rings, there's only dead breath. In the bar across the street, a snub-nosed revolver has changed hands in the men's room. Each bullet has my name on it. My name is written in back files. And looked up in newspaper morgues. My mother's been investigated. Thank God she's dead. They have writing samples and examine the back loops of P's and the crosses of T's. My brother's with them, did I tell you? His wife is Russian and he keeps asking me to fill out forms. I have it in my diary. Listen. Listen. Do listen. You must listen. In the rain, at the bus stop, black crows with black umbrellas pretend to look at their watches, but it's not raining. Their eyes are silver dollars. Some are scholars in the pay of the FBI. Most are the foreigners who pour through our streets. I fooled them. Got off the bus at 25th and Lex, where a cabbie watched me over his newspaper. In the room, above me, an old woman has put an electric suction cup on her floor. It sends out rays through my light fixture, and now I write in the dark by the bar sign's glow. I tell you, I know. They sent me a dog with brown spots and a radio cobweb in its nose. I drowned it in the sink and wrote it up in folder gamma. I don't look in the mailbox anymore. The greeting cards are letter bombs. Step away, goddamn you. Step away. I know tall people. I tell you, I know very tall people. The luncheonette is laid with talking floors. And the waitress says it was salt. But I know arsenic when it's put before me. And the yellow taste of mustard to mask the bitter odor of almonds. I have seen strange lights in the sky. Last night a dark man with no face crawled through 9 miles of sewer to surface in my toilet, listening for phone calls through the cheap wood with chrome ears. I tell you, man, I hear. I saw his muddy handprints on the porcelain. I don't answer the phone now. Have I told you that? They are planning to flood the earth with sludge. They are planning break-ins. They have got physicians advocating weird sex positions. They are making addictive laxatives and suppositories that burn. They know how to put out the sun with blowguns. I pack myself in ice. Have I told you that? It obviates their infrascopes. I know chance, and I wear charms. You may think you have me, but I could destroy you any second now. Any second now. Any second now. Would you like some coffee, my love? Did I tell you I can't go out no more? There's a man by the door, in a raincoat.
The Raft. Read by Stephen King.
It was 40 miles from Horlicks University in Pittsburgh to Cascade Lake, and although dark comes early to that part of the world in October, and although they didn't get going until 6 o'clock, there was still a little light in the sky when they got there. They had come in Deke's Camaro. Deke didn't waste any time when he was sober. After a couple of beers, he made that Camaro walk and talk. He had hardly brought the car to a stop at the pole fence between the parking lot and the beach before he was out and pulling off his shirt. His eyes were scanning the water for the raft. Randy got out of the shotgun seat, a little reluctantly. This had been his idea, true enough, but he had never expected Deke to take it seriously. The girls were moving around in the back seat, getting ready to get out. Deke's eyes scanned the water restlessly, side to side. Sniper's eyes, Randy thought uncomfortably, and then fixed on a point. "It's there," he shouted, slapping the hood of the Camaro. "Just like you said, Randy. Hot damn, last one in's a rotten egg." "Deke," Randy began, resetting his glasses on his nose, but that was all he bothered with, because Deke was vaulting the fence and running down the beach, not looking back at Randy or Rachel or Laverne, only looking out at the raft, which was anchored about 50 yards out on the lake. Randy looked around as if to apologize to the girls for getting them into this, but they were looking at Deke. Rachel looking at him was all right. Rachel was Deke's girl. But Laverne was looking at him, too, and Randy felt a hot, momentary spark of jealousy that got him moving. He peeled off his own sweatshirt, dropped it beside Deke's, and hopped the fence. "Randy!" Laverne called, and he only pulled his arm forward through the gray twilight October air in a come-on gesture, hating himself a little for doing it. She was unsure now, perhaps ready to cry it off. The idea of an October swim in the deserted lake wasn't just part of a comfortable, well-lighted bull session in the apartment he and Deke shared anymore. He liked her, but Deke was stronger, and damned if she didn't have the hots for Deke, and damned if it wasn't irritating. Deke unbuckled his jeans, still running, and pushed them off his lean hips. He somehow got out of them all the way without stopping, a feat Randy could not have duplicated in 1,000 years. Deke ran on, now only wearing bikini briefs, the muscles in his back and buttocks working gorgeously. Randy was more than aware of his own skinny shanks as he dropped his Levi's and clumsily shook them free of his feet. With Deke it was ballet, with him burlesque. Deke hit the water and bellowed, "Cold! Mother of Jesus!" Randy hesitated, but only in his mind, where things took longer. "That water's 45 degrees, 50 at most," his mind told him. "Your heart could stop." He was pre-med. He knew that was true. But in the physical world, he didn't hesitate at all. He leaped it, and for a moment his heart did stop, or seemed to. His breath clogged in his throat, and he had to force a gasp of air into his lungs as all his submerged skin went numb. "This is crazy," he thought, and then, "But it was your idea, Pancho." He began to stroke after Deke. The two girls looked at each other for a moment. Laverne shrugged and grinned. "If they can, we can," she said, stripping off her Lacoste shirt to reveal an almost transparent bra. "Aren't girls supposed to have an extra layer of fat?" Then she was over the fence and running for the water, unbuttoning her cords. After a moment, Rachel followed her, much as Randy had followed Deke. The girls had come over to the apartment at mid-afternoon. On Tuesdays, a 1 o'clock was the latest class any of them had. Deke's monthly allotment had come in. One of the football-mad alums, the players called them angels, saw that he got $200 a month in cash, and there was a case of beer in the fridge and a new Night Ranger album on Randy's battered stereo. The four of them set about getting pleasantly oiled. After a while, the talk had turned to the end of the long Indian summer they had been enjoying. The radio was predicting flurries for Wednesday. Laverne had advanced the opinion that weathermen predicting snow flurries in October should be shot, and no one had disagreed. Rachel said that summers had seemed to last forever when she was a girl, but now that she was an adult, a doddering senile 19, Deke joked, and she kicked his ankle. They got shorter every year. "It seemed like I spent my life out at Cascade Lake," she said, crossing the decayed kitchen linoleum to the icebox. She peered in, found an iron city light hiding behind a stack of blue Tupperware storage boxes. The one in the middle contained some nearly prehistoric chili, which was now thickly festooned with mold. Randy was a good student and Deke was a good football player, but neither of them was worth a fart and a noisemaker when it came to housekeeping, and appropriated it. "I can still remember the first time I managed to swim all the way out to the raft. I stayed there for damn near 2 hours, scared to swim back." She sat down next to Deke, who put an arm around her. She smiled, remembering, and Randy suddenly thought she looked like someone famous or semi-famous. He couldn't quite place the resemblance. It would come to him later, under less pleasant circumstances. "Finally, my brother had to swim out and tow me back on an inner tube. God, was he mad! And I had a sunburn like you wouldn't believe." "The raft's still out there," Randy said, mostly to say something. He was aware that Laverne had been looking at Deke again. Just lately it seemed like she looked at Deke a lot. But now she looked at him. "It's almost Halloween, Randy. Cascade Beach has been closed since Labor Day." "Raft's probably still out there, though," Randy said. "We were on the other side of the lake on a geology field trip about 3 weeks ago, and I saw it then. It looked like..." He shrugged. "A little bit of summer that somebody forgot to clean up and put away in the closet until next year." He thought they would laugh at that, but no one did, not even Deke. "Just because it was there last year doesn't mean it's still there," Laverne said. "I mentioned it to a guy," Randy said, finishing his own beer. "Billy DeLois. Do you remember him, Deke?" Deke nodded, played second string until he got hurt. "Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, he comes from out that way, and he said the guys who own the beach never take it in until the lake's almost ready to freeze. Just lazy. At least, that's what he said. He said that some year they'd wait too long and it would get ice-locked." He fell silent, remembering how the raft had looked, anchored out there on the lake, a square of bright white wood and all that bright blue autumn water. He remembered how the sound of the barrels under it, that buoyant clunk-clunk sound, had drifted up to them. The sound was soft, but sounds carried well on the still air around the lake. There had been that sound, and the sound of crows squabbling over the remnants of some farmer's harvested garden. "Snow tomorrow," Rachel said, getting up as Deke's hand wandered almost absently down to the upper swell of her breast. She went to the window and looked out. What a bummer. "I'll tell you what," Randy said, "let's go on out to Cascade Lake. We'll swim out to the raft, say goodbye to summer, and then swim back." If he hadn't been half-loaded, he never would have made the suggestion, and he certainly didn't expect anyone to take it seriously. But Deke jumped on it. "All right! Awesome, Pancho! Fucking awesome!" Laverne jumped and spilled her beer, but she smiled. The smile made Randy a little uneasy. "Let's do it!" "Deke, you're crazy," Rachel said, also smiling, but her smile looked a little tentative. A little worried. No, I'm going to do it, Deke said, going for his coat. And with a mixture of dismay and excitement, Randy noted Deke's grin, reckless and a little crazy. The two of them had been rooming together for 3 years now, the jock and the brain, Cisco and Pancho, Batman and Robin, and Randy recognized that grin. Deke wasn't kidding. He meant to do it. In his head, he was already halfway there. Forget it, Cisco, not me. The words rose to his lips, but before he could say them, Laverne was on her feet, the same cheerful, loony look in her own eyes, or maybe it was just too much beer. I'm up for it. Then let's go. Deke looked at Randy. What you say, Pancho? He had looked at Rachel for a moment then and saw something almost frantic in her eyes. As far as he himself was concerned, Deke and Laverne could go out to Cascade Lake together and plow the back 40 all night. He would not be delighted with the knowledge that they were boffing each other's brains out, yet neither would he be surprised. But that look in the other girl's eyes, that haunted look. "Ah, Cisco!" Randy cried. "Oh, Pancho!" Deke cried back, delighted. They slapped palms. Randy was halfway to the raft when he saw the black patch on the water. It was beyond the raft and to the left of it, more out toward the middle of the lake. 5 minutes later, the light would have failed too much for him to tell it was anything more than a shadow, if he had seen it at all. Oil slick, he thought, still pulling hard through the water, faintly aware of the girl splashing behind him. But what would an oil slick be doing on an October deserted lake? And it was oddly circular, small, surely no more than 5 feet in diameter. Woo! Deke shouted again, and Randy looked toward him. Deke was climbing the ladder on the side of the raft, shaking off water like a dog. How you doing, Pancho? Okay, he called back, pulling harder. It really wasn't as bad as he had thought it might be, not once you got in and got moving. His body tingled with warmth, and now his motor was in overdrive. He could feel his heart putting out good revs, heating him from the inside out. His folks had a place on Cape Cod, and the water there was worse than this in mid-July. You think it's bad now, Pancho? Wait till you get out, Deke yelled gleefully. He was hopping up and down, making the raft rock, rubbing his body. Randy forgot about the oil slick until his hands actually grasped the rough, white-painted wood of the ladder on the shore side. Then he saw it again. It was a little closer, a round, dark patch on the water, like a big mole rising and falling on the mild waves. When he had first seen it, the patch had been maybe 40 yards from the raft. Now it was only half that distance. How can that be? How? Then he came out of the water, and the cold air bit his skin, bit it even harder than the water had when he first dived in. Oh, shit, he yelled, laughing, shivering in his jockey shorts. Pancho, you is some kind of big asshole, Deke said happily. He pulled Randy up. Cold enough for you? You sober yet? I'm sober, I'm sober. He began to jump around as Deke had done, clapping his arms across his chest and stomach in an X. They turned to look at the girls. Rachel had pulled ahead of Laverne, who was doing something that looked like a dog paddle performed by a dog with bad instincts. You ladies okay? Deke bellowed. Go to hell, Macho City, Laverne called, and Deke broke up again. Randy glanced to the side and saw that odd, dark, circular patch was even closer, 10 yards now and still coming. It floated on the water, round and regular, like the top of a large steel drum, but the limber way it rode the swells made it clear that it was not the surface of a solid object. Fear, directionless but powerful, suddenly seized him. Swim! He shouted at the girls, and bent down to grasp Rachel's hand as she reached the ladder. He hauled her up. She bumped her knee hard. He heard the thud clearly. Ow! Hey! What? Laverne was still 10 feet away. Randy glanced to the side again and saw the round thing nuzzle the offside of the raft. The thing was as dark as oil, but he was sure it wasn't oil. Too dark, too thick, too even. Randy, that hurt. What are you doing, being fun? Laverne, swim! Now it wasn't just fear. Now it was terror. Laverne looked up, maybe not hearing the terror, but at least hearing the urgency. She looked puzzled, but she dog-paddled faster, closing the distance to the ladder. Randy, what's wrong with you? Deke asked. Randy looked to the side again and saw the thing fold itself around the raft's square corner. For a moment, it looked like a Pac-Man image with its mouth open to eat electronic cookies. Then it slipped all the way around the corner and began to slide along the raft, one of its edges now straight. "Help me get her up," Randy grunted to Deke and reached for her hand. "Quick!" Deke shrugged good-naturedly and reached for Laverne's other hand. They pulled her up and onto the raft's board surface bare seconds before the black thing slid by the ladder, its sides dimpling as it slipped past the ladder's uprights. "Randy, have you gone crazy?" Laverne was out of breath, a little frightened. Her nipples were clearly visible through the bra. They stood out in cold, hard points. "That thing," Randy said, pointing. "Deke, what is it?" Deke spotted it. It had reached the left-hand corner of the raft. It drifted off a little to one side, reassuming its round shape. It simply floated there. The four of them looked at it. "Oil slick, I guess," Deke said. "You really rack my knee," Rachel said, glancing at the dark thing on the water and then back at Randy. "You..." "It's not an oil slick," Randy said. "Did you ever see a round oil slick? That thing looks like a checker." "I never saw an oil slick at all," Deke replied. He was talking to Randy, but he was looking at Laverne. Laverne's panties were almost as transparent as her bra, the delta of her sex sculpted neatly in silk, each buttock a taut crescent. "I don't even believe in them. I'm from Missouri." "I'm going to bruise," Rachel said, but the anger had gone out of her voice. She had seen Deke looking at Laverne. "God, I'm cold," Laverne said. She shivered prettily. "It went for the girls," Randy said. "Come on, Pancho, I thought you said you got sober." "It went for the girls," he repeated stubbornly and thought, "No one knows we're here. No one at all." "Have you ever seen an oil slick, Pancho?" He had put his arm around Laverne's bare shoulders in the same almost absent way that he had touched Rachel's breast earlier that day. He wasn't touching Laverne's breast, not yet anyway, but his hand was close. Randy found he didn't care much one way or another, that black circular patch on the water. He cared about that. "I saw one on the Cape 4 years ago," he said. "We all pulled birds out of the surf and tried to clean them off." "Ecological, Pancho," Deke said approvingly. "Mucho ecological, I think." Randy said, "It was just this big, sticky mess all over the water, in streaks and big smears. It didn't look like that. It wasn't, you know, compact." "It looked like an accident," he wanted to say. "That thing doesn't look like an accident. It looks like it's on purpose." "I want to go back now," Rachel said. She was still looking at Deke and Laverne. Randy saw dull hurt in her face. He doubted if she knew it showed. "So go," Laverne said. There was a look on her face, the clarity of absolute triumph, Randy thought, and if the thought seemed pretentious, it also seemed exactly right. The expression was not aimed precisely at Rachel, but neither was Laverne trying to hide it from the other girl. She moved a step closer to Deke. A step was all there was. Now their hips touched lightly. For one brief moment, Randy's attention passed from the thing floating on the water and focused on Laverne with an almost exquisite hate. Although he had never hit a girl, in that one moment he could have hit her with real pleasure. Not because he loved her. He had been a little infatuated with her, yes, and more than a little horny for her, yes, and a lot jealous when she had begun to come on to Deke back at the apartment, oh yes. But he wouldn't have brought a girl he actually loved within 15 miles of Deke in the first place. But because he knew that expression on Rachel's face, how that expression felt inside. "I'm afraid," Rachel said.
"Of an oil slick?"
Laverne asked incredulously, and then laughed. The urge to hit her swept over Randy again, to just swing a big roundhouse open-handed blow through the air, to wipe that look of half-assed hauteur from her face and leave a mark on her cheek that would bruise in the shape of a hand. "Let's see you swim back then," Randy said. Laverne smiled indulgently at him. "I'm not ready to go," she said, as if explaining to a child. She looked up at the sky, then at Deke. "I want to watch the stars come out." Rachel was a short girl, pretty, but in a gammon, slightly insecure way that made Randy think of New York girls. You saw them hurrying to work in the morning, wearing their smartly tailored skirts with slits in the front or up one side, wearing that same look of slightly neurotic prettiness. Rachel's eyes always sparkled, but it was hard to tell if it was good cheer that lent them that lively look or just free-floating anxiety. Deke's tastes usually ran more to tall girls with dark hair and sleepy, slow eyes, and Randy saw it was now over between Deke and Rachel. Whatever there had been, something simple and maybe a little boring on his part, something deep and complicated and probably painful on hers. It was over, so cleanly and suddenly that Randy almost heard the snap, a sound like dry kindling broken over a knee. He was a shy boy, but he moved to Rachel now and put an arm around her. She glanced up at him briefly, her face unhappy but grateful for his gesture, and he was glad he had improved the situation for her a little. That similarity bobbed into his mind again, something in her face, her looks. He first associated it with TV game shows, then with commercials for crackers or wafers or some damn thing. It came to him then. She looked like Sandy Duncan, the actress who had played in the revival of Peter Pan on Broadway. "What is that thing?" she asked. "Randy, what is it?" "I don't know." He glanced at Deke and saw Deke looking at him with that smile that was more loving familiarity than contempt. But the contempt was there, too. Maybe Deke didn't even know it, but it was. The expression said, "Here goes old worrywart Randy pissing in his dighties again." It was supposed to make Randy mumble in addition, "It's probably nothing, don't worry about it, it'll go away," something like that. He didn't. Let Deke smile. The black patch on the water scared him. That was the truth. Rachel stepped away from Randy and knelt prettily on the corner of the raft closest to the thing, and for a moment she triggered an even clearer memory association, the girl on the White Rock labels. Sandy Duncan on the White Rock labels, his mind amended. Her hair, a close-cropped, slightly coarse blonde, lay wetly against her finely shaped skull. He could see goosebumps on her shoulder blades above the white band of her bra. "Don't fall in, Rach," Laverne said with bright malice. "Quit it, Laverne," Deke said, still smiling. Randy looked from them, standing in the middle of the raft with their arms loosely around each other's waists, hips touching lightly, and back at Rachel. Alarm raced down his spine and out through his nerves like fire. The black patch had halved the distance between it and the corner of the raft where Rachel was kneeling and looking at it. It had been 6 or 8 feet away before. Now the distance was 3 feet or less. And he saw a strange look in her eyes, a round blankness that seemed queerly like the round blankness of the thing in the water. Now it's Sandy Duncan sitting on a White Rock label and pretending to be hypnotized by the rich, delicious flavor of Nabisco Honey Grahams, he thought idiotically, feeling his heart speed up as it had in the water, and he called out, "Get away from there, Rachel!" Then everything happened very fast. Things happened with the rapidity of fireworks going off. And yet he saw and heard each thing with perfect, hellish clarity. Each thing seemed caught in its own little capsule. Laverne laughed. On the quad, in a bright afternoon hour, it might have sounded like any college girl's laugh, but out here, in the growing dark, it sounded like the arid cackle of a witch making magic in a pot. "Rachel, maybe you better get Deke said, but she interrupted him, almost surely for the first time in her life, and indubitably for the last. "It has colors," she cried in a voice of utter, trembling wonder. Her eyes stared at the black patch on the water with blank rapture, and for just a moment Randy thought he saw what she was talking about. Colors, yeah, colors, swirling in rich, inward-turning spirals. Then they were gone, and there was only dull, lusterless black again. "Such beautiful colors! Rachel!" She reached for it, out and down, her white arm marbled with goose flesh, her hand held out to it, meaning to touch. He saw she had bitten her nails ragged. He sensed the raft tilt in the water as Deke moved toward them. He reached for Rachel at the same time, meaning to pull her back, dimly aware he didn't want Deke to be the one to do it. Then Rachel's hand touched the water, her forefinger only, sending out one delicate ripple in a ring, and the black patch surged over it. Randy heard her gasp in air, and suddenly the blankness left her eyes. What replaced it was agony. The black, viscous substance ran up her arm like mud, and under it, Randy saw her skin dissolving. She opened her mouth and screamed. At the same moment, she began to tilt outward. She waved her other hand blindly at Randy, and he grabbed for it. Their fingers brushed. Her eyes met his, and she still looked hellishly like Sandy Duncan. Then she fell outward and splashed into the water. The black thing flowed over the spot where she had landed. "What happened?" Laverne was screaming behind them. "What happened? Did she fall in? What happened to her?" Randy made as if to dive in after her, and Deke pushed him backwards with casual force. "No," he said in a frightened voice that was utterly unlike Deke. All three of them saw her flail to the surface. Her arms came up, waving. No, not arms. One arm. The other was covered with a black membrane that hung in flaps and folds from something red and knitted with tendons, something that looked a little like a rolled roast of beef. "Help!" Rachel screamed. Her eyes glared at them, away from them, at them, away. Her eyes were like lanterns being waved aimlessly in the dark. She beat the water into a froth. "Help! It hurts! Please, help! It hurts! It hurts! It hurts!" Randy had fallen when Deke pushed him. Now he got up from the boards of the raft and stumbled forward again, unable to ignore that voice. He tried to jump in, and Deke grabbed him, wrapping his big arms around Randy's thin chest. "No, she's dead," he whispered harshly. "Christ, can't you see that? She's dead, Pancho." Thick blackness suddenly poured across Rachel's face like a drape, and her screams were first muffled and then cut off entirely. Now the black stuff seemed to bind her in crisscrossing ropes. Randy could see it sinking into her like acid, and when her jugular vein gave way in a dark, pumping jet, he saw the thing send out a pseudopod after the escaping blood. He could not believe what he was seeing, could not understand it, but there was no doubt, no sensation of losing his mind, no belief that he was dreaming or hallucinating. Laverne was screaming. Randy turned to look at her, just in time to see her slap a hand melodramatically over her eyes like a silent movie heroine. He thought he would laugh and tell her this, but found he could not make a sound. He looked back at Rachel. Rachel was almost not there anymore. Her struggles had weakened to the point where they were really no more than spasms. The blackness oozed over her. Bigger now, Randy thought. It's bigger, no question about it. With mute, muscular power. He saw her hand beat at it. Saw the hand become stuck, as if in molasses or on flypaper. Saw it consumed. Now there was a sense of her form only, not in the water, but in the black thing, not turning, but being turned, the form becoming less recognizable, a white flash. "Bone," he thought sickly, and turned away, vomiting helplessly over the side of the raft. Laverne was still screaming. Then there was a dull whap, and she stopped screaming and began to snivel. "He hit her," Randy thought. "I was going to do that, remember?" He stepped back, wiping his mouth, feeling weak and ill, and scared. So scared he could think with only one tiny wedge of his mind. Soon he would begin to scream himself. Then Deke would have to slap him. Deke wouldn't panic. Oh, no. Deke was hero material for sure. "You gotta be a football hero to get along with the beautiful girls," his mind sang cheerfully. Then he could hear Deke talking to him. And he looked up at the sky, trying to clear his head, trying desperately to put away the vision of Rachel's form becoming blobbish and inhuman, as that black thing ate her, not wanting Deke to slap him the way he had slapped Laverne. He looked up at the sky and saw the first star shining up there, the shape of the Dipper already clear as the last white light faded out of the west. It was nearly 7:30. "Oh, Cisco," he managed. "We are in big trouble this time, I think." "What is it?" His hand fell on Randy's shoulder, gripping and twisting painfully. "It ate her. Did you see that? It ate her. It fucking ate her up. What is it?" "I don't know. Didn't you hear me before? You're supposed to know. You're a fucking brain ball. You take all the fucking science courses." Now Deke was almost screaming himself, and that helped Randy get a little more control. "There's nothing like that in any science book I ever read," Randy told him. "The last time I saw anything like that was the Halloween shock show down at the Rialto when I was 12. The thing had regained its round shape now. It floated on the water 10 feet from the raft. "It's bigger," Laverne moaned. When Randy had first seen it, he had guessed its diameter at about 5 feet. Now it had to be at least 8 feet across. "It's bigger because it ate Rachel," Laverne cried and began to scream again. "Stop that or I'm going to break your jaw," Deke said, and she stopped. Not all at once, but winding down the way a record does when somebody turns off the juice without taking the needle off the disc. Her eyes were huge things. Deke looked back at Randy. "You all right, Pancho?" "I don't know. I guess so. My man." Deke tried to smile, and Randy saw with some alarm that he was succeeding. Was some part of Deke enjoying this? "You don't have any idea at all what it might be?" Randy shook his head. Maybe it was an oil slick, after all, or had been until something had happened to it. Maybe cosmic rays had hit it in a certain way, or maybe Arthur Godfrey had pissed atomic bisquick all over it. Who knew? Who could know? "Can we swim past it, do you think?" Deke persisted, shaking Randy's shoulder. "No!" Laverne shrieked. "Stop it, or I'm going to smoke you, Laverne," Deke said, raising his voice again. "I'm not kidding." "You saw how fast it took Rachel," Randy said. "Maybe it was hungry then," Deke answered, "but maybe now it's full." Randy thought of Rachel kneeling there on the corner of the raft, so still and pretty in her bra and panties, and felt his gorge rise again. "You try it," he said to Deke. Deke grinned humorlessly. "Oh, Pancho. Oh, Cisco. I want to go home," Laverne said in a furtive whisper. "Okay?" Neither of them replied. "So we wait for it to go away," Deke said. "It came, it'll go away." "Maybe," Randy said. Deke looked at him, his face full of a fierce concentration in the gloom. "Maybe? What's this maybe shit? We came, and it came. I saw it come, like it smelled us. If it's full, like you say, it'll go, I guess. If it still wants chow..." He shrugged. Deke stood thoughtfully, head bent. His short hair was still dripping a little. "We wait," he said. "Let it eat fish." 15 minutes passed. They didn't talk. It got colder. It was maybe 50 degrees, and all three of them were in their underwear. After the first 10 minutes, Randy could hear the brisk, intermittent clickety-click of his teeth. Laverne had tried to move next to Deke, but he pushed her away, gently but firmly enough. "Let me be for now," he said. So she sat down, arms crossed over her breasts, hands cupping her elbows, shivering. She looked at Randy, her eyes telling him he could come back, put his arm around her. It was okay now. He looked away instead, back at the dark circle on the water. It just floated there, not coming any closer, but not going away either. He looked toward the shore, and there was the beach, a ghostly white crescent that seemed to float. The trees behind it made a dark, bulking horizon line. He thought he could see Deke's Camaro, but he wasn't sure. "We just picked up and went," Deke said. "That's right," Randy said. "Didn't tell anyone." "No." "So no one knows we're here?" "No." "Stop it," Laverne shouted. "Stop it. You're scaring me." "Shut your pie hole," Deke said absently, and Randy laughed in spite of himself. No matter how many times Deke said that, it always slew him. "If we have to spend the night out here, we do. Somebody'll hear us yelling tomorrow. We're hardly in the middle of the Australian outback, are we, Randy?" Randy said nothing. "Are we?" "You know where we are," Randy said. "You know as well as I do. We turned off Route 41. We came up 8 miles of back road. Cottages every 50 feet. Summer cottages. This is October. They're empty, the whole bucking bunch of them. We got here, and you had to drive around the damn gate, no trespassing signs, every 50 feet. So? A caretaker?" Deke was sounding a little pissed now, a little off balance. "A little scared?" For the first time tonight, for the first time this month, this year, maybe for the first time in his whole life? Now there was an awesome thought. Deke loses his fear, Cherry. Randy was not sure it was happening, but he thought maybe it was, and he took a perverse pleasure in it. "Nothing to steal, nothing to vandalize," he said. "If there's a caretaker, he probably pops by here on a bi-monthly basis." "Hunters?" "Next month, yeah," Randy said, and shut his mouth with a snap. He had also succeeded in scaring himself. "Maybe he'll leave us alone," Laverne said. Her lips made a pathetic, loose little smile. "Maybe it'll just..."
You know, leave us alone.
Deke said, maybe pigs will. It's moving, Randy said. Laverne leaped to her feet. Deke came to where Randy was, and for a moment the raft tilted, scaring Randy's heart into a gallop and making Laverne scream again. Then Deke stepped back a little and the raft stabilized, with the left front corner, as they faced the shoreline, dipped down slightly more than the rest of the raft. It came with an oily, frightening speed, and as it did, Randy saw the colors Rachel had seen. Fantastic reds and yellows and blues spiraling across an ebony surface like limp plastic or dark, live Naga hide. It rose and fell with the waves, and that changed the colors, made them swirl and blend. Randy realized he was going to fall over, fall right into it. He could feel himself tilting out. With the last of his strength, he brought his right fist up into his own nose, the gesture of a man stifling a cough, only a little high and a lot hard. His nose flared with pain. He felt blood run warmly down his face, and then he was able to step back, crying out, "Don't look at it! Deke, don't look right at it! The colors make you loopy!" "It's trying to get under the raft," Deke said grimly. "What's this shit, Pancho?" Randy looked. He looked very carefully. He saw the thing nuzzling the side of the raft, flattening to a shape like half a pizza. For a moment, it seemed to be piling up there, thickening, and he had an alarming vision of it piling up enough to run onto the surface of the raft. Then it squeezed under. He thought he heard a noise for a moment, a rough noise, like a roll of canvas being pulled through a narrow window, but that might have only been nerves. "Did it go under?" Laverne said, and there was something oddly nonchalant about her tone, as if she were trying with all her might to be conversational, but she was screaming, too. "Did it go under the raft? Is it under us?" "Yes," Deke said. He looked at Randy. "I'm going to swim for it right now," he said. "If it's under there, I've got a good chance."
"No," Laverne screamed. "No, don't leave us here. Don't."
"I'm fast," Deke said, looking at Randy, ignoring Laverne completely. "But I've got to go while it's under there." Randy's mind felt as if it was whizzing along at Mach 2. In a greasy, nauseating way, it was exhilarating, like the last few seconds before you puke into the slipstream of a cheap carnival ride. There was time to hear the barrels under the raft clunking hollowly together, time to hear the leaves on the trees beyond the beach rattling dryly in a little puff of wind, time to wonder why it had gone under the raft. "Yes," he said to Deke, "but I don't think you'll make it." "I'll make it," Deke said, and started toward the edge of the raft. He got two steps and then stopped. His breath had been speeding up, his brain getting his heart and lungs ready to swim the fastest 50 yards of his life, and now his breath stopped like the rest of him, simply stopped in the middle of an inhale. He turned his head, and Randy saw the cords in his neck stand out.
"Punch!"
he said in an amazed, choked voice, and then he began to scream. He screamed with amazing force, great baritone bellows that splintered up toward wild soprano levels. They were loud enough to echo back from the shore in ghostly half-notes. At first, Randy thought he was just screaming, and then he realized it was a word. No, two words, the same two words over and over.
"My foot!" Deke was screaming. "My foot! My foot! My foot!"
Randy looked down. Deke's foot had taken on an odd, sunken look. The reason was obvious, but Randy's mind refused to accept it at first. It was too impossible, too insanely grotesque. As he watched, Deke's foot was being pulled down between two of the boards that made up the surface of the raft. Then he saw the dark shine of the black thing beyond the heel and the toes, dark shine alive with swirling, malevolent colors. The thing had his foot.
"My foot!" Deke screamed, as if to confirm this elementary deduction. "My foot! Oh, my foot! My foot!"
He had stepped on one of the cracks between the boards. "Step on a crack, break your mother's back," Randy's mind gibbered. And the thing had been down there. The thing had...
"Pull!" he screamed back suddenly. "Pull, Deke, goddammit, pull!"
"What's happening?" Laverne hollered, and Randy realized dimly that she wasn't just shaking his shoulder. She had sunk her spade-shaped fingernails into him like claws. She was going to be absolutely no help at all. He drove an elbow into her stomach. She made a barking, coughing noise and sat down on her fanny. He leaped to Deke and grabbed one of Deke's arms. It was as hard as Carrara marble, every muscle standing out like the rib of a sculpted dinosaur skeleton. Pulling Deke was like trying to pull a big tree out of the ground by the roots. Deke's eyes were turned up toward the royal purple of the post-dusk sky, glazed and unbelieving, and still he screamed, screamed, screamed. Randy looked down and saw that Deke's foot had now disappeared into the crack between the boards up to the ankle. That crack was perhaps only a quarter of an inch wide, surely no more than half an inch, but his foot had gone into it. Blood ran across the white boards in thick, dark tendrils. Black stuff, like heated plastic, pulsed up and down in the crack, up and down, like a heart beating. Gotta get him out. Gotta get him out quick, or we're never gonna get him out at all. Hold on, Sisko, please, hold on. Laverne got to her feet and backed away from the gnarled, screaming Deke tree in the center of the raft, which floated at anchor under the October stars on Cascade Lake. She was shaking her head numbly, her arms crossed over her belly where Randy's elbow had gotten her. Deke leaned hard against him, arms groping stupidly. Randy looked down and saw blood gushing from Deke's shin, which now tapered the way a sharpened pencil tapers to a point. Only the point here was white, not black. The point was a bone, barely visible. The black stuff surged up again, sucking, eating. Deke wailed. Never going to play football on that foot again. What foot, ha-ha? And he pulled Deke with all his might, and it was still like pulling at a rooted tree. Deke lurched again, and now he uttered a long, drilling shriek that made Randy fall back, shrieking himself, hands covering his ears. Blood burst from the pores of Deke's calf and shin. His kneecap had taken on a purple, bulging look as it tried to absorb the tremendous pressure being put on it as the black thing hauled Deke's leg down through the narrow crack, inch by inch. Can't help him. How strong it must be. Can't help him now. I'm sorry, Deke. So sorry. Hold me, Randy, Laverne screamed, clutching at him everywhere, digging her face into his chest. Her face was so hot it seemed to sizzle. Hold me, please. Won't you hold me? This time, he did. It was only later that a terrible realization came to Randy. The two of them could almost surely have swum ashore while the black thing was busy with Deke. And if Laverne refused to try it, he could have done it himself. The keys to the Camaro were in Deke's jeans, lying on the beach. He could have done it, but the realization that he could have never came to him until too late. Deke died just as his thigh began to disappear into the narrow crack between the boards. He had stopped shrieking minutes before. Since then, he had uttered only thick, syrupy grunts. Then those stopped, too. When he fainted, falling forward, Randy heard whatever remained of the femur in his right leg splinter in a green stick fracture. A moment later, Deke raised his head, looked around groggily, and opened his mouth. Randy thought he meant to scream again. Instead, he voided a great jet of blood, so thick it was almost solid. Both Randy and Laverne were splattered with its warmth, and she began to scream again, hoarsely now. "Ugh!" she cried, her face twisted in half-mad revulsion. "Ugh! Blood! Ugh! Blood! Blood!" She rubbed at herself and only succeeded in smearing it around. Blood was pouring from Deke's eyes, coming with such force that they had bugged out almost comically with the force of the hemorrhage. Randy thought, talk about vitality. Christ, look at that. He's like a goddamned human fire hydrant. God, God, God. Blood streamed from both of Deke's ears. His face was a hideous purple turnip, swelled shapeless with the hydrostatic pressure of some unbelievable reversal. It was the face of a man being clutched in a bear hug of monstrous and unknowable force. And then, mercifully, it was over. Deke collapsed forward again, his hair hanging down on the raft's bloody boards, and Randy saw with sickish amazement that even Deke's scalp had bled. Sounds from under the raft. Sucking sounds. That was when it occurred to his tottering, overloaded mind that he could swim for it and stand a good chance of making it. But Laverne had gotten heavy in his arms, ominously heavy. He looked at her slack face, rolled back an eyelid to disclose only white, and knew that she had not fainted but fallen into a state of shock unconsciousness. Randy looked at the surface of the raft. He could lay her down, of course, but the boards were only a foot across. There was a diving board platform attached to the raft in the summertime, but that, at least, had been taken down and stored somewhere. Nothing left but the surface of the raft itself, 14 boards, each a foot wide and 20 feet long. No way to put her down without laying her unconscious body across any number of those cracks. Step on a crack, break your mother's back. Shut up. And then, tenebrously, his mind whispered, "Do it anyway. Put her down and swim for it." But he did not. Could not. An awful guilt rose in him at the thought. He held her, feeling the soft, steady drag on his arms and back. She was a big girl. Deke went down. Randy held Laverne in his aching arms and watched it happen. He did not want to, and for long seconds that might even have been minutes, he turned his face away entirely, but his eyes always wandered back. With Deke dead, it seemed to go faster. The rest of his right leg disappeared, his left leg stretching out further and further, until Deke looked like a one-legged ballet dancer doing an impossible split. There was the wishbone crack of his pelvis, and then, as Deke's stomach began to swell ominously with new pressure, Randy looked away for a long time, trying not to hear the wet sounds, trying to concentrate on the pain in his arms. He could maybe bring her around, he thought, but for the time being it was better to have the throbbing pain in his arms and shoulders. It gave him something to think about. From behind him came a sound like strong teeth crunching up a mouthful of candy jawbreakers. When he looked back, Deke's ribs were collapsing into the crack. His arms were up and out, and he looked like an obscene parody of Richard Nixon giving the V for Victory sign that had driven demonstrators wild in the 60s and 70s. His eyes were open. His tongue had popped out at Randy. Randy looked away again, out across the lake. Look for lights, he told himself. He knew there were no lights over there, but he told himself that anyway. Look for lights over there. Somebody's got to be staying the week in his place. Fall foliage, shouldn't miss it. Bring your Nikon. Folks back home are gonna love the slides. When he looked back, Deke's arms were straight up. He wasn't Nixon anymore. Now he was a football ref, signaling the extra point had been good. Deke's head appeared to be sitting on the boards. His eyes were still open. His tongue was still sticking out. "Oh, Cisco," Randy muttered, and looked away again. His arms and shoulders were shrieking now, but still he held her in his arms. He looked at the far side of the lake. The far side of the lake was dark. Stars unrolled across the black sky, a spill of cold milk somehow suspended high in the air. Minutes passed. "He'll be gone now. You can look now." "Okay, yeah, all right. But don't look, just to be safe. Don't look. Agreed?" "Agreed, most definitely. So say we all, and so say all of us." So he looked anyway, and was just in time to see Deke's fingers being pulled down. They were moving. Probably the motion of the water under the raft was being transmitted to the unknowable thing which had caught Deke, and that motion was then being transmitted to Deke's fingers. Probably. Probably. But it looked to Randy as if Deke were waving to him. The Cisco Kid was waving adios. For the first time, he felt his mind give a sickening wrench. It seemed to cant the way the raft itself had canted when all four of them had stood on the same side. It righted itself, but Randy suddenly understood that madness, real lunacy, was perhaps not far away at all. Deke's football ring, All-Conference, 1981, slid slowly up the third finger of his right hand. The starlight rimmed the gold and played in the minute gutters between the engraved numbers, 19 on one side of the reddish stone, 81 on the other. The ring slid off his finger. The ring was a little too big to fit down through the crack, and of course it wouldn't squeeze. It lay there. It was all that was left of Deke now. Deke was gone. No more dark-haired girls with slow eyes. No more flicking Randy's bare rump with a wet towel when Randy came out of the shower. No more breakaway runs from midfield with fans rising to their feet in the bleachers and cheerleaders turning hysterical cartwheels along the sidelines. No more fast rides after dark in the Camaro with Thin Lizzy blaring "The Boys Are Back in Town" out of the tape deck. No more Cisco Kid. There was that faint, rasping noise again, a roll of canvas being pulled slowly through a slit of a window. Randy was standing with his bare feet on the boards. He looked down and saw the cracks on either side of both feet suddenly filled